businesses in Kent to do business. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody, on this wonderfully rainy day. I was listening to the weather forecast there on the news section, and apparently it's raining.
Apparently. It's absolutely persistent.
Anyway, thank you very much for joining us on this lovely, sunny, rainy summer's day. Myself, Martin White, and my co-host...
Me, Brian Wakefield.
On the bi-weekly Kent Biz Connect radio show, the show that connects businesses in Kent to do business. Brian, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Martin. Good. Thank you for asking.
Good. We haven't been here for a while, have we?
No, we've had a three-week layoff because bank holiday, and you wouldn't let bank holidays and your golf...
No.
Come and interfere with
not
anything.
Even the rain on Saturday interfered with it. I still managed to find that weather window.
Yeah, as you should, I think. You stick at it. So, yes, three-week layoff and we're back.
But we're back with some fabulous guests in the studio. So why don't introduce our guests today?
We've got two wonderful guests here. We have the lovely...
Michelle Dowsett from Discovery PA Solutions.
And the questionably even lovelier...
Kelly Farrant from Pest Tech Limited.
Welcome, guys. Thank you for coming today. It's fabulous to have you with us. Kelly, I guess you'd normally be up on a roof today somewhere, bird-proofing or something, would you? It's a little bit too wet for that today, I guess.
Yes, rain stops play on that one.
Excellent.
Quite right.
Excellent. Quite right, too. And Michelle, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today, because I know you have lots and lots of clients that you work with providing support. So
yeah,
thanks for
you.
Joining us.
Thanks
That's
for
brilliant.
Having me.
I think what we're going to do is we've got lots of events that are happening in Kent at the moment. We've got some news as well, not necessarily all good news in terms of what's going on in the wider kind of business community. What are we going to kick off with, Brian?
Anything that caught our eye in the news, really. We don't want to talk about the mechanical elephant, do we?
No, we don't want to talk about
that. We'll just mention
that.
It quickly then, shall we? Well, the mechanical elephant, what is that, I hear you say? Well, it's the new Wetherspoons in Margate, and it's been closed for several weeks because they've enjoyed a £500,000 refit and refurb, and it's going to look... so sexy, it's going to hurt. So,
okay.
Basically, apparently.
Yeah.
So,
well, I drove past there yesterday, and it looks like it's still got the same clientele. So, something that
I'd shame. I think that's a soft opening. It's supposed to be by invitation, okay. And the odd, I guess you two guys don't frequent Margate's watering holes very often, do you?
No.
I tend to stay up in the Maidstone area.
There you go, see. Yeah. So you are the East Kent contingent, Whitey. So you'll be the research party and have a look at that, I think. So other than that, one thing that did catch my eye was Clive Empson.
Oh.
Of Homes Under the Hammer and other auctioneer fame.
Yes, Empson Auctioneers.
Yeah, that's the one. Well, he's fairly local, isn't he? From from Monk's Horton near Folkestone.
Right.
But caught my eye that he's just been awarded an MBE and for services to vulnerable and disadvantaged young people.
Oh, so not for his auction house?
No, that's the interesting thing, isn't it? It's not actually for his business, and it's for services and his charitable causes.
Well done,
and
Clive. So I didn't even know about that.
That's and his head office is in Maidstone, Kelly, isn't it?
Yes. I must admit, it's something you don't expect. You think it's going to be for his auctioneer prowess, should we say?
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, they are a success story.
So,
Clive.
That's good. Michelle, you've not been awarded an MBE yet.
No.
That's one of the injustices, I think, that we're having to tolerate.
I'm trying my best. I love helping people.
You'll get there.
Yeah.
Give it another 40 years.
This time next year. 40 years? Yeah. This time next year, I reckon.
Now, somebody else, a little bit more local to us, who's also been awarded or also been named in the honours list, is our very own Joe James. From Kent
from the Chamber.
The Chamber of Commerce, who's actually been awarded an OBE. So, sorry to trump you there, Clive, but Joe's actually been awarded an OBE, and I would imagine that is for lifelong service to the business community of Kent, because I think she's been at the Chamber for some 30-plus years now.
So
she won't like me for saying that, but congratulations, Joe, and really well done.
OBE. I wonder what the running order was with these BEs.
It's complicated,
so,
isn't it?
So I'm sure it is.
You've got a sort of a knighthood, and a, so you've got a sir and a dame, and then you've got a CBE, Commander of the British Empire.
We've got a sir and a dame here, haven't we?
Indeed, we have. Then we've got OBE, which I think is Order of the British Empire, and then we've got MBE, which is Member of the British Empire, I think. Yeah. So that's the kind of, that's the hierarchy.
Oh, is it?
But,
oh, okay.
I don't think it matters, does it? It's clearly nice to be recognised for doing a great job. So well done.
It's big up. That's good.
She's fabulous.
She was one of the first people that helped me out when I come out of the army.
Joe?
Yeah. Was she?
Oh, wonderful.
What, did she help you dig the tunnel?
Yeah, took the chains off.
No, she's not that old.
She actually helped me out. Her father was in the army, and she gave me a good few hours of her time.
Oh, so, excellent. Yeah. Oh, fantastic. Good. Well, perhaps we'll talk about that a little bit later on. What else has been in the news this week? There's been some not so good news, hasn't there, in terms of KCC and their pension investment.
Well, I was just going to say exactly that. Of all the not so good news, that's probably the closest to home that there is. So you, as our expert political correspondent, can you kind of give us the lowdown? I read a little bit about Neil Woodford, saw it come up on the internet, who I know is a fund manager and stuff like that. And I know some people that work with him, but I wasn't sure if he'd kind of been suspended, struck off, shot or whatever. But then, so give us the lowdown on that, Martin.
Well, I mean, we had Brian Downton on from Downton and Alley recently, and Brian runs a financial planning, financial services company. And the first thing Brian would kind of caveat any article or anything full stop with is, you know, the value of your investments may go up as well as, may go down, sorry, as well as up. And I think Neil Woodford is one of these kind of city stars that kind of started his own investment fund a few years back now. And unfortunately, they've had a bit of a downturn. And some of the businesses that they've invested in, so people like Kia, massive construction firm, and Purple Bricks, that some people might know a bit closer to home, they're not performing very well. And I think at one point they were managing about £10 billion worth of funds. And I think that's dwindled now to £2 or £3 billion, I think. And a lot of the investors are asking for their money back.
Is that just market forces or something they've done?
As I said in the beginning, you know, the value of investments can go down as well as up. And I think he's just a victim of circumstance at the moment. Clearly he's done very well in the past and his investments aren't doing so well at the moment. And KCC have asked for their £260 million worth of pension pot that they've given him back, and he said, no, you can't have it because I haven't got it.
Is that how much it is?
Yeah.
All the pensions?
Yeah. So, well, it's not all of it. It's only about, I think in KCC's case, I think they're saying it's about 6% of their total £6.5 billion investment.
A mere bagatelle.
Yeah. But nevertheless, it's still, you know, £250 million. There's a lot of uncertainty as to if if the investors will ever get their money back. And I think it was quoted in the press last week as, if you want it back now, you can have it at 10p in the pound, which is kind of...
That's not ideal, is it?
Especially if you've got a pension and you know, you thought it was nice and safe.
I was going to say that then. So should people that work for KCC and stuff and have pensions with them, as Michelle said, should they be A, worried, and B, doing something about it?
Well, I would imagine if they haven't received one already, there will be a letter winging its way to everybody that has a pension with KCC, advising them that, you know, this situation has arisen and how they're kind of going to try and manage their way through it. But the bottom line is, there's not a lot they can do. You know, they clearly can't get their money out until such time as the fund becomes a bit more liquid in terms of, you know, the ROI on the investments that they've made, an element of it may need to be written off at some point. And
it's not brilliant, is it?
A nice thing. I mean, the council's always struggled, I think, to balance the books. Doesn't matter whether you're kind of KCC or, you know, local district.
So it won't
council.
Mean more cuts to services and things like that, then?
Well, it'll be another black hole that needs to be plugged, won't it, somehow? So, you know, I mean, you know, clearly, I would imagine the pension fund is already in deficit versus the number of people that will be entitled to claim a pension from KCC at some point in the future. I'd imagine there's already a huge deficit there, as there is with most, you know, most private companies. Mm. I can't imagine there'd be any difference there. So this is just a kind of another kind of body blow, isn't it?
Well, Kelly's used to plugging black holes, but they've normally got rats down or something like that. And, of course, he doesn't have to worry about that with his £500,000-a-year army pension that he rakes in.
So. I wish.
So some not-so-good news. And, of course, then we've had a bit more, you know, we've had a bit of kind of wider economy news as well, haven't we, in the last week, I think, about how the car industry and the kind of a slowdown in production is affecting GDP. And I think, did they say in April we'd gone into a kind of a negative growth month? And I can't believe it's taken this long, to be honest with you, with all the kind of the uncertainty around Brexit and all the, you know, all the shenanigans up at you know, up at Parliament and the kind of uncertainty. I mean, it's just crazy, isn't it? And obviously that's finally been reflected in the GDP numbers. So if we have another quarter of or another month of that, I believe we're then officially in recession.
In recession,
and
3 months on.
That's a real possibility, isn't it, considering we've got to wait till October.
Yeah.
And everything else that's going on.
Well, and they're already, you know, some of the candidates for leadership already saying October's just a kind of just a date. Mm-hmm. I mean, Michael Gove, I think, went on record last week saying, you know, he's not going to be beholden to an October date. You know, could well drift beyond that. And you think, crikey, you know, what planet are these people living on?
In respect to Brexit and stuff like that. Well, so, as I said months ago, I'll believe it when I see it. I just can't see it happening. No. It's just a
but
mess.
It is interesting that uncertainty is now clearly starting to bite in terms of the kind of the wider economy.
Yeah, the Ford was saying that it wasn't due to Brexit. It was due to consumer buying, which was down. So, you know, the car market, are people slowing down on the buying of the cars?
Oh, there's no doubt about that, yeah. No doubt about it. I mean, you need to look at the offers that the car manufacturers are throwing at people, you know, to try and kind of get some kind of momentum. So
I think it's more of a correction in many cases, isn't it? Because, you know, with people that were buying a new car every 2 years or 3 years, is that necessary? Is it natural? So perhaps it's more of a correction that people do it every 4, 5 or 6, perhaps. Yeah. I mean, we've got two people in the studio here that, from what I can see, seem really, really busy. They're not struggling at all in you know, in business or trying to or getting work and stuff like that. So I guess it's what you do and how you do it, isn't it, largely?
Mm. Yeah, no, and you're right. I mean, I think small businesses have always been the backbone of the economy. But ultimately, everybody is affected, you know, make no mistake, because it all trickles down, and it will all trickle down. This is just kind of the start of it in many ways, I suspect. So, yeah. Mm. Anyway, I think we'd better move
on. That's enough of that.
Yeah,
I think.
Exactly. We'd better move on to something a bit more positive.
Cheerier.
Yeah, a bit cheerier. Yes, happier. Exactly. A bit more bright and sunny on this lovely bright and sunny day.
Not. Good. What do you want to talk about now?
Well,
then?
I think we should tell people about all the wonderful things that are happening in our wonderful county on a business level this month, Brian, don't you?
Oh, okay. We'll do that then. We'll take a look at the events.
Yes, let's have a look at events and kind of promotions and things like that. So, Marsh Networking Breakfast. The next one is on the 20th of June, Thursday the 20th of June, at 7:30 at the Ship Inn in Dymchurch. And that's Terry Botfield. He runs a very successful networking group down there on the Marsh, Marsh Networking. Check that out and get yourselves booked on. I think it's £10, including breakfast on the day, something like that.
Hmm. Excellent. And we've got some BBN. That's funny how that's fallen on the list, isn't it? I'm not sure I can sit and talk about BBN, but I will. We've got some BBN meetings coming up, of course, in June. Next one is Dartford this week at Dartford Football Ground. That's our fortnightly Thursday meeting. There's possibly one place left for there, although you've just said you want to come now. So I think that one place is gone. But
it's always fluid, though, isn't it? It's always fluid.
Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen between now and then. And then we've got Bromley next Wednesday at the Bromley Football Ground in Hayes Lane. Usually 30 odd people there, so a few spaces, and then we'll be back at Maidstone the following Friday. No chance of anyone else getting in for that. It's hideously oversubscribed.
Okay, good.
But we'll deal with that another day.
So if you fancy some networking this Thursday in Dartford, Brian may be able to squeeze you in, so have a chat with him about that. All of this, all of these events, everything we're reading out now, by the way, you'll find on the community page of Supply My Business, so that's your reference point if you want to find out more information. Our hosts here, Kent Space, they run a monthly networking group at Ashford and also Chatham. And Brian, you go to the Chatham one, don't you?
Yeah, I do. It's next week, 19th of June.
Next Wednesday, 19th of June from 5:30. There's nibbles and guest speaker on always on those. And the following week, Wednesday the 26th of June, it's actually at Ashford. And again, there's nibbles and a guest speaker on the night there as well. So your contact for both of those really is Sue McGowan. That's sm@kentspace.co.uk. Just let her know if you'd like to pop along, and she'll make sure she buys enough sandwiches and sausage rolls.
I'm impressed you knew her email address off the top of your head, but then it is an easy one. So
what else we got?
Our friend Gary Johnson at Racing Events. Mm-hmm. It's the Superbikes this weekend. So he's preempting that with some networking in his suite, which is Suite A7. So that's this Friday the 14th. There'll be networking from 10 till around 12:30. Can be a bit noisy because it's practice day. So there's loads of people hurtling around at 200 mile an hour. There's an outdoor bit and everything else. There'll be some lunch and welcome to hang around.
Is it the Superbikes, did you say?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is. Mm. There'll be something noisy happening, whatever it is.
I guess some of those riders will be fresh back from the TT as well, won't they? So I know James Hickman is a superbike rider, and there's no rest.
And I was just talking to our very own Sue McGowan downstairs that was talking about driving back from there in the rain, wasn't she, Michelle? So,
from the Isle of Man?
Yeah.
Has she just been to the Isle of Man? She went to the TT?
Oh, she loves all that.
She didn't tell me that.
Oh, yeah, she does.
I'll have to have a chat with her. Yeah, they had an awful week, I think, for the TT this year, really. What, 2 weeks?
Mm.
Oh, gosh, okay. Well,
she's also our guest in 2 weeks' time, I think.
She is indeed. Did she tell you that?
She did, yeah. Good job, because you hadn't. So that was, she did mention it.
Right, what else have we got going on? Let's, I know something that's wonderful. There's a brilliant little coffee shop in Broadstairs called Caffeine. And they do lovely, they do a lovely continental breakfast because they host a monthly breakfast networking gathering. It's in the High Street in Broadstairs. It's called Caffeine. And it's actually run in conjunction with the FSB as well. And that's next Monday from 9 o'clock. So it's not silly o'clock either. It's 9 o'clock in the morning till 10:30. There is a guest speaker as well. What you need to do, again, is follow the Eventbrite booking link on Supply My Business and get yourselves along to that. So if you're looking for something in Thanet on a kind of networking level, that I can guarantee you is a top-quality event.
Good. Okay. We'll wear Gary Johnson out now we've spoken about him, but he's got his Network Kent at Bridgewood Manor, which is the 26th, always the last Wednesday of the month, and that's 10 till about 12:30. So you can turn up on the day, usually a tenner. There'll be coffee, biscuits and a speaker. And, nice, relaxing networking environment.
Good. The FSB, as we know, they run a lot of networking events. Some are free, some are kind of breakfast where you have to pay a £10 fee. They've also got one coming up at Tunbridge on Wednesday the 19th of June. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, 8 till 9:30. It's at the Judeans Rugby Football Club, and I know that's always a very popular one as well. So, again, there's an Eventbrite booking link for that, but you'll find all of that on Supply My Business.
Always makes me laugh when I hear that. It's like that Monty Python sketch, the People's Republic of Judea. But it's not them, I assume.
It's not them.
No. Okay. Nearly forgot, there is quite a big event coming up on the 27th, which is LinkedIn Live.
Yes.
That's quarterly. Mm-hmm. Michelle, you're often heftily involved in that, aren't you?
I support the lovely Sam Beadle, who obviously helps organise the event for LinkedIn Local Kent.
Right, Flat to Be Me event.
So it's a free event to register for. There's a website now. You'll see lots of posts on Facebook and LinkedIn. So I'll be on the registration desk welcoming people as they arrive. So looking forward to seeing lots of people. Some great guest speakers. And it's the third event now.
Yes, it is.
Over 300 businesses last time.
Yeah, it's a hefty event. Good job it's only quarterly, because, 300 odd. Kelly, you were there, weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I missed the first one because I didn't know about it. But I found out after, I saw all the hype afterwards, and I thought, well, get myself along there.
Have a little look.
Good, excellent.
And it's down the road from us as well, isn't it, which is quite handy.
Booked in already, so.
Yeah, good. Yeah, I think they've brought that forward. Sam was saying a couple of weeks ago, it used to be kind of 6 till 9, but I think they're looking at doing it from 5 till 8. I don't know why we didn't get that far, which actually might not help me on that day, we'll have to have a look.
Okay. Need to give a shout out for Herbiz Maidstone. So this is a free women in business startup workshop series. It's actually run by the Let's Do Business Group in conjunction with the Business Terrace in Maidstone, a brilliant Sean Henry. This is actually a competition in the first instance. So what they're looking for are female entrepreneurs looking to start up a new business locally in Kent. And there is an entry process for this, basically, to qualify for the workshop series. So they're going to be picking the best prospective new female entrepreneur-led businesses in Kent to qualify for this workshop series. All the details, again, are on the community page of Supply My Business. But if you are thinking about starting up your own business, the programme will include things like creating a business vision, identifying some of the barriers to starting up a business, really going into some detail about your business model. So it's going to give you the A to Z that you need to successfully start a new business. So deadline for entry is the 1st of July. Herbizmaidstonejuly.eventbrite is the booking link. Or again, it's all on Supply My Business. So good luck with that. Brian, you've moved.
Yeah, I've kind of done my bit.
You've done your bit, okay.
But I'm pleased to say that Michelle does have a couple of events she'd just like to flag up. So, Michelle.
Thank you. They are female entrepreneur networking events.
Did you know about that one?
I've not heard of that one, actually. Okay. And I do go to quite a few female entrepreneur events, and I hadn't heard of that one. So I will definitely be having a little look at that one on the website later. Mm-hmm. So Women in Business, run by the lovely Grace Kelly of 21st Century Flooring. So they've got their event in August. It's the first Wednesday of every month. Just meet once a month. Very supportive group, real varied industries as well. So, but really, really supportive. And so the first Wednesday in August is the event at K Sports.
Oh, K Sports, home of BBM Maidstone.
Yeah.
So that's a quarterly, is it?
That's monthly.
Oh, monthly.
Monthly,
okay.
Yeah. But it's their sort of main sort of open event, really, in August. And then secondly, quite a relatively sort of newer female networking group called Wonder Women Network, which is run by Liz Goodfellow. So she actually had her flagship networking event yesterday held at Maidstone in Victor Grammar. So it was a great event. Ruth Pennell was there from the BBN.
Because she did her very first Facebook Live from there, didn't she? Did you see that?
Yeah, she had a challenge on Friday.
I think Paul Wilson forced her to do it, I think.
Yeah, he did, but she did a brilliant job for the first time. So
I had a horrible feeling you were going to say run by Linda Carter, because I had this vision.
Wonder Woman vision going through my head. Now, I remember her. She's more my era, Linda Carter. I remember her.
You don't know who we're talking about, do you? No.
I do. Just a nod.
Sorry, I interrupted you. I interrupted you.
But, you know, one of the best things about Liz's events is all about not just the networking, but just really nurturing the individuals, so combining fitness and well-being, and she does quite a few collaborations as well. So she's doing one with Danielle Early, who's a business and personal coach called Fit for Business. So it has an element of networking and giving you real time to reflect on your business, but also mentoring. So there's lots of tools in there. I've not been to any other networking event that offers sort of some mentoring, actually, within the session.
Wonderful.
So there's a few spaces left for the event. It's on Wonder Women Network and Danielle Early as well. So have a little look, but they're some really good events.
Kelly, have you got anything coming up you'd like to give a shout out for?
No, not really. I mean, I've just signed up for business networking in Maidstone.
Oh, yes, in July. Yeah, it's at the Terrace, isn't it?
I went to the last one and very good.
Oh, Business Terrace.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that. That's Sean again.
Yeah, and that's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, and the LinkedIn Live that
good.
Just signed up.
Good. Excellent. Mm. All right. Well, I'm going to give a quick shout out for our own networking event that's also happening next Wednesday.
Oh, yeah.
So this is the FSB, Ashford International Hotel, Supply My Business, and the Kent MS Therapy Centre based in Canterbury. And we have our monthly after six networking next Wednesday at the hotel. So we'd love to see as many of you as possible there. And the Marlow Theatre are giving our guest presentation this month. So they're going to be talking about their new business club that they've revamped, and also some of the kind of the changes in kind of leadership and management of the Marlow that have happened over the last year, because it's no longer owned by the council. It's now public-private ownership, but it's no longer the council. So that'll be interesting. So we'd love to see you there. It's next Wednesday, 6 o'clock. That's what it's called, after six, at the Ashford International Hotel.
How creative, Martin.
Brilliant. Right, let's move on. Should we talk to a guest?
Guest time, yes, why not? Let's brighten up the proceedings. Who are we going to talk to?
Well, I think before we do that, we ought to play a little bit of tunage to see if people can guess who we're going to be talking to.
Guess the link?
Yes, guess the link.
I like this bit.
That's exactly. So here we go. Let's play some tunage and see if people can guess the link.
live at Kent_biz.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Brian.
That nearly worked, didn't it?
Explain the link to us.
Well, I'll tell you what. Do you know who sang that? That was Everything She Does Is Magic by The Police. Right. And the clue is in the title.
Oh.
Because Everything She Does Is Magic, and that is our experience of the wonderful Michelle Dowsett.
Not blushing at all in
really
the corner.
Blushing, really blushing. That's put me on a bit of a pedestal now, hasn't it? I hope I'm not going
to
disappoint.
You won't, Michelle. Welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So tell us, Michelle, you operate under the umbrella of Discovery PA Solutions.
Yeah, that's right.
So what does that actually mean? What do you do?
Yeah, so Discovery PA Solutions is my own business, so I'm not a franchise or anything. I'm a virtual personal assistant.
Right.
So I support businesses, sole traders, consultants, anyone who's got any admin, and we all have admin. We all have that elusive to-do list. You know, I support anybody, you know, in them, allowing them to outsource that to me so I can give them back some time for them to invest in their business. So
now, before we came on air, we were having a conversation about how this kind of this market for these kind of support services that you offer, how it all came about. And just, you know, in your own words, what do you think the kind of what led to this kind of dynamic in the marketplace?
Well, I think we all sort of agreed, you know, there's always been the temp, you know, there's always been a business that's just got that little bit busier and temporarily needed that support. So there's always been a need to outsource work. But I think really, you know, from the mid-90s, the rise of the internet and, you know, all the apps and the software and women wanting to work more flexibly around their families, I think it's just naturally, it's just grown and grown. And it's hard to know how many VAs there are out there because there isn't one sort of institute that everyone's sort of registered. There's a society of virtual assistants. There's about 2,500 out there, but there are a lot more. Predominantly women. There's about 97% of them are women, but there are, you know, there are a few men as well.
I don't know any male ones, I have to say.
No.
There's a few sort of, you know, I'm part of a few support groups for virtual assistants because it's an amazingly collaborative industry and it's one of the things that I love about what I do. You know, there is no competition with VAs because everyone has so many different skill sets that it's very collaborative and there are a few men within those groups.
So give us an example of some of the types of projects and work that you get involved with on behalf of your clients. I mean, I outsource some of the work in my business because it just makes sense from a time point of view to kind of to do it that way. But what kind of stuff do you get involved with typically on a kind of day-to-day basis?
Every day is different and every client is different and the needs, you know, vary from sort of lifestyle event management to, you know, your day sort of daily diary and email management. But, you know, every day I'm doing different tasks. So I could be helping design a website. I could be doing some online internet research. I could be contacting businesses and following up with clients. Some clients need support in-house, on-site, in their businesses so that I can spend time maybe sort of training with their team or just sorting out their admin generally. But, you know, last week I was, you know, ordering, you know, a toaster on Amazon and ordering some double glazing for, you know, for some property, sorting out some adverts for advertising properties. Mm-hmm. So that's, again, another thing that I just really love about the business. Every single day is different. And every single day I genuinely learn something sort of new about a new industry.
Is it fair to say that small business owners generally are sort of, reluctant to use the word kind of control freak, but we really struggle to kind of let go of stuff, don't we? So at what point do you think comes the realization for the business owner that what on earth am I doing here worrying about ordering a new toaster for the office? You know, why am I getting involved with this kind of stuff? At what point do you think the sheer level of work or whatever it is just kind of takes over and kind of becomes too much for people to kind of manage themselves? I mean, how do you get to that kind of realization?
I think sort of business owners, they just become overwhelmed by the amount of admin that they've got to do, and usually something happens. They've missed an important appointment, or they've maybe lost a client because they haven't had the time to follow up with them. Usually there's something that's sort of, you know,
the
trigger. That's, but also it's about, you know, I really spend a lot of time with my clients, getting to know them, getting to know their business, because as a business owner myself, I know how important their brand is, and if I do work for them, I'm a reflection of them and their brand. So it's really important to protect that And I build that relationship up with my clients so that they have that trust with me. Mm. And there are a few clients who are real sort of, you know, quite controlling. They don't want to let anything go. And then you've got other clients who just say, there's my problem. You just, I'm going to trust you to just go and just sort it for me. So they're quite varied, really. And I love working with both types.
But it's interesting what you say about there being a sort of trigger event quite often, because we had Tracy Westall on from Pecunia Credit Management a few weeks back, and she was talking about how, you know, credit control and just kind of asking people to pay their invoices is something that often gets forgotten about because the business owner is just too busy doing the kind of the day-to-day, and that would be a good example, I guess, of something that
you
could...
Well, and it's very time-consuming as well, because, of course, a lot of... instances there the people don't actually want to talk to you, so it's not as if you're making a phone call, is it, and then you get it resolved. It's usually several because they're ignoring calls and emails and things like that.
And it's like Tracy said, some people don't like talking about money either. You know, and I've supported clients and sort of, and also maybe looking at their prices, doing some competition research of whether or not they're charging the right prices. You know, I've had a client where I encouraged them to increase their prices on their product, and it resulted in several thousand pounds in, you know, increased profit. But they needed that support and confidence that they were making the right decisions. So sometimes having that third party there as advice, and I've got 15 years experience of being in business. So sometimes just having me there to bounce ideas off helps get their juices flowing again and helps them feel creative.
I think that's really important, because let's talk about your background a little bit, because you used to work for Debenhams, didn't you?
I did, yes.
So were you a regional manager in Kent, regional store manager? Is that how it worked?
Or? I worked my way up as from a management trainee straight from university. Right. So I spent 15 years with Debenhams and worked my way up to become a store manager. So I ran several stores within the Kent region. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I had my family. My husband is in the same role. So it's very difficult to sort of balance that work-life balance with children. And so I then moved into a PA role. So I became the assistant to the sales director for the whole of the Kent region. So I got to know a lot of the stores, all of the staff, you know, and the store managers. And having done that job as well, I think that was a real bonus for me, because I could support them with their admin, but yet I understood what their role required of them as
well. So that ticks lots of boxes kind of immediately, doesn't it, in terms of being organised, you know, keeping appointments, scheduling appointments, meetings, all of that kind of stuff kind of is your bread and butter,
and
really,
the experience,
isn't it?
You know, in stores, there isn't a HR manager, there isn't a finance manager or an ops manager. You know, there is just a store manager. Yes. So when you are a store manager, you're looking after the payroll, the budgeting, the books.
Marketing, everything, I guess. In-store stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so all of those skills in that. And I some great people within that business, you know, and I know it's sort of being challenged at the moment, especially in Kent, and my heart goes out to them in that position. But I learnt some amazing skills that I'm now using that to support my clients.
Yes, yeah, fantastic. Good, good. Now, the other thing that I know you do, because, I mean, as a business owner, inevitably you have to be able to kind of, you have to have a broad range of skills, I think, as a business owner. But, you know, you also are quite clear about when you need to draw the line in terms of your expertise and actually call in other people like yourself to manage specific aspects of a client kind of requirement or brief, I guess. So how does that work when you know, if a client says to you, actually, I'm, you know, what I need is an SEO specialist for my website because, you know, my organic search ranking is pants and I'm on page 3 and I need to be on page 2.
Yeah.
You know, what happens in that instance, for example?
Absolutely. You know, there are basic skills that you can have, basic admin skills that will, you know, be a benefit to all of your clients. But you've got clients maybe in perhaps in niche industries or needing help with niche topics like SEO that I then work with a team of associates with.
Right.
And provided the client is happy and always, you know, your VA's got to be open and honest that they are working with associates, then I'll outsource that work, because as a VA, I can't be, you know, at the top of my game for the latest sort of training for every bit of software across every single industry. You know, that's just physically not possible. And it's, if I can give my clients a better service by outsourcing to an associate. So associates are, you know, they're freelance as well. They're just sort of subcontractors. Their work is, you know, I'm really thorough with interviewing them, reviewing their qualifications. Their work is checked. Mm-hmm.
So it's not just like it's not a loose referral.
No.
It's not, oh, well, there's a guy over there that does it, but I've never worked with him. I don't know if he's any good. It's, yeah. You know, you will actually take the time to find the right person based on that client
That's
profile.
Right.
And
they've
that
got
need.
To they've got to have the skill set, they've got to have the experience, the insurance, the registration with the ICO and anti-money laundering, if that's required. Mm-hmm. And then the work is checked.
Right.
And I always, you know, I have a very good relationship with my clients. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm regularly speaking with them and making sure that, you know, that work fits my standard because it's my brand as well.
On an overall level, you retain the client ownership and client management kind of function.
Yeah.
But you call in additional services as and when you need to.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds like the perfect kind of solution in many ways between sort of, you know, businesses that are at that, because there is a kind of in-between point, isn't there, Kelly? And I know, you know, we're going to talk to you in a bit, but there is an in-between point where, you know, you've started a business, it's been tough for 3 or 4 years, but you're actually now at a point where you're thinking about taking on staff or you're kind of thinking about an interim solution to maybe get you to that critical next level where employing somebody full-time or part-time actually makes more sense. So yeah. I guess...
And especially as the economic climate is, you know, the situation at the moment as well. You know, do you want to be taken on a permanent employee?
I think, I think it comes down to that risk management of you know, like you say, do I take someone on or do I... In my case, I took on my wife, which was quite convenient because that was that risk where I was managing on both sides. Mm. But now we're as a company looking at taking on possibly another, and I'm asking myself those questions of, do I need to maybe outsource or I go ahead and take on?
It's probably one of the kind of the toughest decisions that business owners have to take, that isn't it, you know, to actually, because it's a massive responsibility, isn't it, because you don't want to just take somebody on and then you know have to let them down the next minute and say I'm sorry but we haven't got the work to kind of justify the role. And
that, I mean, that was my biggest fear. I mean, I felt with all my employees, you take responsibility and I'm thinking about they've got homes to go to and they've got mortgages to pay, and you know, you've got to make sure that decision's right, otherwise you know, if you get it wrong, then you're messing with people's lives.
Yeah.
And that's one of the best sort of benefits, really, of hiring a virtual assistant. They're, you know, you're not paying their holiday, you're not paying their sick pay, you're not paying time for training, you're not paying the overheads.
But if it gets to the
purely
point...
the time that they need, because I think in Kelly's instance, you've got certain skills that not just anybody can do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I would suggest... very simply, that anything vaguely administrative is easier just to send out instead of you doing it, and you can get on with controlling pests. And I think also on the Michelle route is, as you said, Martin, if you're looking at maybe do we need to take on a staff member, well, ultimately, if that's going to be 5 days a week or 40 hours or whatever, you're probably not at that stage. You might only want 20 hours or 10, but you're going to be paying them a full-time wage. And then you're kind of under pressure to think, I've actually got to find them more work to do now or go and get more work. Whereas I think in Michelle's situation, I'd think, right, okay, well, let's try it for 5 hours a week or something, see what happens. And then, okay, this clearly isn't enough. Can we up it to 8 or 10 or whatever? And you can maybe do it in bite-sized
chunks.
If
you get to the point where, you know, I'm paying you for 37 hours a week, you know, I've then got to say, well, you know, that's probably costing me more than it would to actually employ somebody full time. So that's your kind of logical next step.
I've done that with clients before, where I've sort of helped support, get the processes in place, get them working more efficiently, and then helped them recruit someone to take that admin, and then supported them with the training. And that's, you know, some clients just need short term support. You know, I've had one recently who took his first holiday in a few years. Didn't have to worry about his email, didn't have to worry about his, you know, his phone calls and missing out on any of his clients. Was really, really grateful. And then I've got other clients who need regular support, you know, a large number of hours every week. And that's the flexibility of a virtual assistant is, you know, one of the benefits.
So what would you say the kind of smallest amount of regular hours you do for someone on a weekly basis?
Some clients are just 5 hours a month. And that might just be helped with sort of a newsletter or some data input in, some filing. And then I've got other clients, it's sort of 2 or 3 days a week.
And how do you charge for that? So I guess some clients that use you on a kind of monthly basis for a fixed number of hours. Do you have like a retainer, monthly retainer that you charge? And then others that want ad hoc here and there, you charge them based on an hourly rate?
That's right, yeah. Right, so okay. Ad hoc's generally an hourly basis, and then clients that know they need support and they know they need it weekly are on a monthly retainer.
Right, okay. And it makes, I guess it's more economical to do it on a monthly retainer if you've got those kind of hours and do it hour by hour on an hourly rate, I guess.
Yeah, okay. and it just regular communication with the client, really. Mm. If they've got a certain number of hours in the month, you know, I'll contact them, I'm speaking to them regularly. Right. The time is all tracked. Mm. So we always have a list of, you know, their to-do lists, their priorities, and sort of liaising with them of what they want the hours to be invested in.
So what is a ballpark, I'm going to put you on the spot now, what is a ballpark hourly rate then?
£30 an hour.
30. Okay. Yeah. Right. Okay. That's interesting. Okay.
Which, you know, sometimes, you know, initially sounds quite a lot, but when you look at it and you know, there's no holiday being paid, there's no sick pay, there's no overheads, there's, you know, there's insurance. When you take all of that out, obviously, the rate is more about £17 an hour.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, it's the same, isn't it? If you
public liability and all sorts of stuff.
You take on an employee at £30,000 a year, the real cost to you is probably going to be 48 or something.
Yeah, national insurance, pension now.
Yeah. Okay. Your actual liability. Uh-huh. But that's interesting that you say, because I hadn't thought, because you think 5 hours a month, right, that's like an hour a week or something. What could somebody want in an hour a week? But then when it might be a one-off of 5 hours once a month, mightn't
that's
it?
Right.
With newsletters and stuff like that, like all your stuff when you do the SMB stuff and you think, crumbs, there's quite a lot to do.
Yes.
If that's something you can outsource and not have to worry about it, that's great. Great idea, isn't it?
Yeah, and as I say, I think I guess at some point for businesses, it either makes sense to kind of carry on that way because it works, or actually it would be better now to kind of to take the next step and employ someone. And in Kelly's case, you know, set them up with a van and you know, effectively let them be their own boss within your business.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me, where do you go next? Because how long have you been doing this for?
So I started as an associate. So I'd left employment last summer, which was a really hard decision. No experience at all. Being
Debenhams.
I was made redundant from Debenhams actually the year before. So I was a PA for an estate agent in Tunbridge Wells on the Pantiles called Madison's. Mm-hmm. Fantastic company. Loved working there, but just a nightmare commute. And so really, I just had that realization of a better work-life balance and spending 3 hours in the car every day. And I had the support from a lady that I'd worked with. Debenhams, Anne Reed at the PA portal, and she's really been my mentor. You know, I worked and still do support her as an associate, and she's really helped me settle in and helped me build my business. So only relatively new, really, after Christmas, sort of early January, did I sort of take on my own clients, and I've just, you know, in the first 6 months, it's just been fantastic. So
you don't work under Anne's brand, you are your own brand in the marketplace.
I am now, yes.
And is that is her model though something that you will look to replicate over time in terms of the associate model? And
yes. So I work regularly with two associates now,
right?
And I'll just keep looking to build that. And networking is fantastic for that as well, in just meeting people with different skills, social media, and because I don't have one niche, a lot of my clients need support in all areas. So having those specialists who are at the top of their game. To be able to outsource that, my client gets the work done quicker, and you know, and the work is spot on, and I use networking for that quite a lot. So my long term aim is to expand my associate support.
So you're now in a position where you're able to offer somebody an income opportunity as well, under the Discovery PA Solutions, I guess, brand.
That's right, and some of them are new VAs, sort of. You know, they're looking to leave corporate roles, and they're, you know, I do a lot of support really with new people who are looking to go into being a VA as a new career.
Right.
And so that's a great opportunity to give back, because Anne certainly did that to me last year. And so I like to be able to do that. But I work with a number of associates who are experienced VAs as well.
Right.
You know, they've been in the industry a long time. They have their own regular clients. And that's what I mean about how collaborative the industry is.
And the beauty of it is you can decide the hours to suit you, can't you? I mean, if you've only got 10 hours a week or maybe less, maybe you've only got 5 hours a week.
Yeah.
But you've got a certain skill set and, you know, a brief comes along and you think, oh, that would be perfect for Paula, or that's ideal for Lucy.
Well, a lot of the work you can do exactly, especially research and stuff online, you can do it at midnight, can't you?
It is, it's really flexible. There's a lot of mums, you know, who sort of fit it in between the school hours. You know, my hours are beyond that now, so a lot of my client work is between 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, and then I do a lot of work in my own business, and I love networking. I spend a lot of time networking within my business, and so that's... I'm at that point now where I'm growing and will probably outsource the work, even maybe my own admin, to a VA.
So well, it was quite interesting, wasn't it? Because we started talking at the back end of last year, and you were making that transition really into Discovery PA, and it was very just as I was launching BBM Maidstone for the first meeting in January. So it kind of come together at pretty much
perfect timing,
the same right time, didn't it? And you seem to have. Done okay out of BBM Maidstone, I think, Michelle, and as we have out of you, more importantly, with some great help and tips.
Kelly. I've got a question for you. I mean, do you find, obviously, when you find a new customer and client, do you have to do a lot of research into the actual business that they're working in? I mean, do they give you a job that you think...
I do, before I meet, so I have usually about an hour, 2 hour sort of business consultation where I just talk about the business, and I do a lot of research before that, so I feel like I know about the person's business. But if it's an industry that I know nothing about, I'm very honest with the client with that. And there's a couple that I've worked with, and I know nothing about the industry, but they've just said, do you know what, it's you, it's your personality, and you'll pick it up just like you would do if you were an employee. But you've got to be honest, and there are some VAs who aren't honest out there, and they say they can do something and they can't do it, and you really can't do that. You've got to be honest.
There's no room for BS in any of this, is there?
There
isn't, because you're having a fundamental impact on someone's business, and often you know all of the details of someone's business. You know, you're privy to, to all of the information. You've got to be trusted, respected in the industry, absolutely, and you've got to know what you're doing.
Mm. Fantastic. Well, Michelle, it sounds like there's going to be potentially lots of people out there. I won't say ladies, because as Brian said, they may well be men for whom, there are a lot of stay-at-home husbands these days, for whom this kind of work might be ideal. So how do people get in touch with you? Because you are looking to build your network continually. So what's the best way for people to get in touch?
So I've got my website, discoverypasolutions.co.uk. I'm on Twitter at discovery_PA, or they can just email me, michelle@discoverypasolutions.co.uk.
Fantastic. Well, for the time being, thank you so much for coming on the show. That was wonderful. It's 5 to 4 already, which is amazing, really. We've kind of skipped through the first hour at a fair old rate of knots.
Well, we've done all the news and the events.
Well, we've done all of that. So I know you're going to stay with us while we talk to our next guest, Kelly, but I think what we need to do to introduce Kelly is play a bit more tunage.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you think so, Brian?
Bit of linkage, bit of tunage.
So let's see if if people can identify the link on this one. everybody. Brian, perhaps you can help identify the
perhaps
link.
I can say that's enough of that, or should I say that's enough of rat. So yeah, that was UB40. I remember them. Do you know how they got their name? Do you remember that? UB40?
I don't know.
Well, they were all rumoured to have met down at the stock exchange, the job offer place.
Oh, yeah.
The Dole.
The job centre.
Basically, yeah. Right. Yeah, where you go and sign on. Yeah. And when you have to sign on every week for your benefits, that was called a UB40. Yes. It was a full number UB40.
Of course it was.
Because they all met there. It was UB40.
Yes.
So there you go. So that was, yeah, there's a rat in the kitchen. What are you going to do?
Perish the thought.
So what would you do if you've got a rat in the kitchen? Well, I'll tell you what you do. You phone Kelly Farrant at Pest Tech. Kelly, welcome.
Well, thank you for having us today.
Welcome to the studio. It's pouring with rain outside, which is why you're probably here and not on a roof somewhere fitting anti-kind of bird proofing or something like that, I guess, is it?
Not at all, not at all. No, this was in the diary. But saying that, I mean, everything we do is weather dependent. Mm. I mean, we range from putting bird spikes on roofs, as you say, but you know, even the weather has an effect on things like insects and their behaviour and stuff like that. It can alter the day. And as we was talking earlier, you, with my sort of business, you have to juggle the diary massively, almost on a daily, hourly sort of scenario.
Now, a bit like Michelle, I would imagine no 2 days are the same for you. So just give us an idea of the scope of kind of some of the work that you get involved with, Kelly, because I've got my own first-hand
your
experience.
Your versatility.
But yes, tell us kind of what you do day to day.
I mean, it is a strange business, because on a day-to-day business, sometimes you just don't know what you're going to find. You can get called out for one problem, and actually, for example, I hear scratching in the loft. I think I've got mice. Turns out it's wasps eating away at the wood, and you know, you're dealing with a wasp nest, not a mice.
Right.
But that's, you know, turning up at the door. But with our industry, you are literally talking about you have seasons. So the sort of October to February time, you have your rats and mice, and then we go into as the winter sort of lays off, and the mice and rats want to go back outside again to their natural habitat.
Is that because it's autumn, I guess?
Yeah, and well, say coming out of the winter.
They're looking for somewhere.
So they're coming in your house when it's cold.
Yeah, when it's cold, and that's often what happens. And then you get to the end of it, and then we start going into, you know, sort of March time, we start seeing the bees come out, the bumblebees and the honeybees and the ants and stuff like that. We go on to sort of June now, when you should be starting to see the wasps. We just started treating wasp nets. They're at the sort of golf ball stage, and they obviously grow over the summer.
I hate wasps.
And then you go back, that takes you all the way through to the winter again, and then you get your all-year-round stuff. For example, your bed bugs, which is not such a nice subject. And
so do you even deal with things like that?
We do everything.
How does someone know if they've got a problem with bed bugs?
They wake up and they're itching
a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of itching. There's a lot of normally that's part of our job. You're not so much a sort of pest controller, you're a detective. You are someone rings you up with a problem, and you are listening. A good example of that is at the networking, one of the networkers come up to me and said, my friend's got this. She described it, and I said, that doesn't sound like that at all.
Right.
It sounds like you've got pigeon, you know, she thought she had bed bugs. She had bird mite, because she had birds nesting on the outside of the building. But I identified that just from what she told me.
And then somehow that had been transferred into the inside?
Yeah, basically the bird mite from the bird nest had then come inside. But that's what you do on a day-to-day basis. It's like a detective job.
Wow.
So, yeah, we deal with everything. But, you know, when it comes to bed bugs, you've also got things like pets, fleas, that can deal with summer when it starts getting warm, or winter when you start putting the central heating on, there's a sudden spike in activity. You've got all year round stuff like your wildlife, you know,
foxes, I guess,
and rabbits, squirrels. I know it's a bit of an emotive subject, but unfortunately, you know, there are some situations. For example, we've just been dealing with a situation in a school where you just can't have a fox that looks like it's going to, you know, bite children.
No.
So something's got to be done.
Yes.
And it's not always about destroying or,
no,
you know, sometimes it can be, we offer advice about how we can you know, change the situation.
Well, I mean, I want to talk about that in a bit more detail, because I came to you recently because I was looking to acquire not a pest problem, but
some bees,
a swarm of bees. What I like about you, Kelly, is you will always try and rehome where possible rather than kind of destroy.
Absolutely.
And so you'd obviously had a call out to a customer that had a swarm in their garden on their Leylandii trees. It happened, and you went round and you removed it, but you had a new home for them, as it were, and that was my house.
Yeah, so I mean,
in your house,
not actually in the house. If
you've seen his garden, I'll tell you what, you'll never find them again.
when you say not in the house, although the day before I had actually removed a swarm from a bedroom that had come in through the windows.
Right,
but they went home to find 3,000 bees swarming around their bedroom. And the lights were on, and they were going crazy.
Yeah.
So now it's about what we have to do is follow the rules and regulations. Mm-hmm. Some things we have to deal with as we have to deal with, but other things, you know, the bees, they're not protected, but they are becoming endangered, and we actually actively try and save, you know, wildlife if we can,
wherever
possible within the guidelines of the law. Mm. And bees is a good one where we always try and rehome them, and. You know, I've given you a swarm, I've given other people swarms.
Yes, Ash Lawrence, I think, has had a few over the years.
And, you know, there's quite a number of other people that I've given swarms to. Mm. I like the idea of someone coming to me saying, I want to get into beekeeping. Mm. Brilliant. Mm. You tell me when you're ready, I'll try and get you a swarm.
Kelly even lent me his spare suit for a week because mine was coming all the way from China
did
and
it hadn't
arrived. It did, actually.
Blimey.
That's another story, though, isn't it?
It is funny, though, because I was talking to somebody on Facebook the other week who wanted to acquire some natural local Kent honeybee beeswax. Yeah, furniture polish.
Mm.
And I said, I wouldn't have actually been using it myself for that purpose, but I can supply you some potentially in September, you know, would you? Oh, yes, please let me know, you know. So one thing leads to another, doesn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. Mm. And that's what I was saying about collaborative. I mean, we're exactly the same.
Mm.
We do deal with pretty much most things. I started off right from the start of not knowing the industry at all and trained up, and I'm on constantly on courses and learning things like store products and pests and
yes, because you were is it the Asian hornet that you were learning about last weekend or the weekend before?
Yeah, there was a guy over from France who was, it's a big thing over there. The Asian hornet is destroying bees' nests, and we've had four nests now in the UK, two of them in Dungeness. So obviously it's a new subject and a new species that's that we need to know about. So book on a course and it just happens he was doing a talk to a load of beekeepers and I just
so how have
on.
They arrived in this country? I mean, have it's, they come on a boat or?
Well, it started from, I believe it's China. It was by boat to France, and they've traveled all across France now. And
because they could quite easily be in a container, I guess. Exactly. They come into a container port, gets opened up, and away you go.
Yeah, that's exactly. And different with Asian hornets as well, because whereas honeybees, you just get one queen, with an Asian hornet, there's about 15 queens.
Oh, gosh.
So if you destroy the nest incorrectly, what you're doing is dispersing all those queens to go off and build their own.
Yeah. Hive. Well, it's another, each one is a swarm in its own right.
Exactly.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm. So power.
Yeah. So it's got to be done properly.
How did you kind of manage to get into it, Kelly? Because when I first met you, which was, I don't know, 10 or 12 years or so ago, you'd just come out of the army after 25 years
I wish it was. I say that it was about 5 years ago, six years ago. Yeah, I come out of the army and I was in that awkward predicament. As I mentioned, I had a good chat with Joe James at the time. Mm-hmm. I was trying to discover what to do. I didn't know.
Okay.
I had sort of ideas of what I was going to do, tried them, and very quickly realised I want to work on my own. Mm. Or not on my own, but for myself. Mm. I didn't really do that transition that well, and being told what to do.
Well,
down
you were
to,
a regimental sergeant major.
Yeah.
So Kelly wasn't the kind of guy that was used to being told what to do.
No.
It was more the other way around.
Yeah, that, there is probably a part of it. It's been a few years since I've been told what to do. But, it just so happened I wanted to do something working for myself. And I looked around and I thought, well, what can I do? I've got to find a trade or something that I can learn and then sell. As a skill.
Apart from shouting at people, you mean?
Shouting at the pests. Get out.
You bounders.
But no, it's just about finding something. And I thought, well, the pest control industry, there's crossover. When you're dealing with wildlife, there's the camouflage, the knowing that smells, scent and stuff like that. And, it all ties in with the camouflage and concealment of the cages and stuff like that. So there was sort of crossover there. And that wasn't the issue. I think the biggest issue was the learning business, the army cocoons you in this world of very much looking after you. I was lucky I bought my own house early and started sort of making that breakaway. But learning business was, wow. Yeah. It was like...
So which bit of that in particular can you kind of, did you really struggle with? What was the hardest thing?
To be honest, the hardest thing I found about setting up my own business was, it's a horrible thing, but trust. I'd spent 25 years... trusting people.
Yes.
You ask them to do something, they do it. And if they don't do it, they'll tell you why, and they're completely honest and open.
Because lives depended on it.
Exactly. That's the great thing about the army. And you live to these values and standards. And that's what I've brought to my business. If I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. If I go somewhere and do something that, for example, going on a roof and I break a tile, I'll go down to that customer and say, look, this has happened. I'll sort it.
Yes.
Because that's what I'd want someone to do for me.
Of course.
And part of how did I get into it? I started off in a franchise, and that was my first sort of introduction to civilian. I felt like.
Into the real world.
Yeah, into the real world. Yeah. I was very let down by my franchise I bought, so much so that after paying a lot of money for it, I walked away from it 6 months later.
Gosh. I remember that.
Probably the best move I ever made. It was tough. The franchise was rubbish. The franchisees, the guys working within, were brilliant. They really were. They helped me out. There was almost like a person on the end of the phone all the time. When I'm going to remove my first bumblebee's nest, and he says, just pick it up and put it in the box. Are you sure?
Yes.
I've got gloves on and my bee suit, but it's like, look, literally just pick up that bee's nest and put it in the box. Yeah, that'd be fine.
Having done my first inspection last week, I can totally identify with that. There is a huge amount of trepidation when you first go near tens of thousands of bees.
and that was the first part of it. I mean, I walked away from that franchise and set up my business. Pretty much, I had it all prepared for the day I left the franchise, and the next day I was operating as pest tech, and it just went from there. And to be honest, like you were saying there, every day's a learning day. There's not a day that goes by where you don't see something new. Unfortunately, the rats, the mice, they don't read the manual.
I think there's a lot to be said for that army education, because it is an education, isn't it? Because we know another guy, don't we? We know Rob Young.
Yeah.
And we know Tim Johnson, Red and Green Buffet. Rob from IEC Cleaning. He was trooper, wasn't he, out in Iraq in the First War. And I think you all have that same ethic.
Yeah.
Honesty and discipline and...
Yeah. Absolutely. Hard work. And as you said, wanting to be treated or treating others as you would want to be treated yourself. And I think that goes an awful long way in business. And I think in many ways, business, particularly on a kind of networking level, it can be very superficial. What you need to know is you need the trust. You need that in the background.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's what underpins everything in business.
Exactly that.
And find a way of cutting through all that as well.
Yeah. I mean, we run our business on the trust thing. And we find as well is we get customers ring us up and they say, we've got a moth problem and can you solve it? And the first thing we say is, but before we do that, there's a few things you can do. Mm. You can try this and try that. Mm-hmm. It might work. If not, then you probably need a professional. And, you know, by doing that, if they can't solve it themselves, they will come back to you. And, you know, if they do solve it themselves, then they'll come back to you anyway and say, brilliant, it worked. Thanks. I can't thank you enough.
Let's talk about the kind of commercial side to what you do, because, you know, we on occasion we will all have a problem with a rodent or with a wasp's nest or a swarm of bees, whatever it might be. But on a commercial level, I guess it's about prevention and making sure it doesn't happen in the first place, because something like that in a business could be incredibly damaging. If you had the health inspector around and they found an infestation of cockroaches in your kitchen, you'd be shut down, wouldn't you?
Yeah, exactly that. And
a lot of it's kind of cleanliness, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean...
food storage and...
The first thing we always talk about in the pest control industry is environment. It's the environment you create. And a lot of people, unfortunately, get these problems through no fault of their own, whether it be imported, it's been brought into, whether it be on a food source or, you know, a delivery or something like that. But there are some people that sort of open themselves up because... unfortunately, the environment or the cleanliness of the place is not great. And that's part of what we do as well. I mean, we get asked to come in sometimes when it's too late and something's already happened, and we're there to resolve the problem and then suggest other measures, a contract that, you know, we can monitor. But at the same time, we also have to go in, and sometimes you have to be very careful, but trying to persuade them to up their game, shall we say, with the running of the place, whether it be a food source or even, you know, anything to do with the general public. Yeah. If you're running any sort of business and there's a problem, if you don't get it resolved, you are liable.
Well, I guess restaurants are an obvious example, but even, premises like where we are today at Kent Space, for example, you know, Kent Space have an annual service contract with a company to make sure that, you know, they're not opening themselves up to potential problems.
Exactly.
So what would that include? I mean, for a managed sort of serviced office space like this, what would that kind of annual...
Yeah, you do a lot of that, Kelly.
Yeah,
we kind of inspection include.
We sort of run about... We've got about 100, 120 contracts at the moment, and they range from all sorts of premises, and that would be, you know, schools, restaurants, as you said, or just general units. And it could be something that they're positioned close to a railway or river, or and that there's a natural problem. But so what we do in that situation is... we have to follow the law again. So things have changed in the industry, and that's happened since I've been in it in the 4 or 5 years now, where we do non-toxic monitoring. So, you know, not every box has got poison in.
Right.
You know, when you go to a restaurant, you see something on the floor and you think, oh, they've got mice.
Mm.
Not necessarily. They're being proactive, and they've got something in place to identify if there is a problem.
Right.
You know, the block in there is non-toxic, but what it does is gives... it turns the urine to ultra. You can pick it up with a torch,
UV,
and you can follow trails. And because, you know, mice urinate all the time, and you can follow these things. And so it's about going often, you know, sort of monthly visits, checking.
So there may not be an obvious problem, but in the first instance, you need to understand if they have actually got rodents or if they have got insects or whatever it is.
Exactly. I mean, we do all sorts of monitoring. Yeah, we're doing monitoring. I'd say 90% of the time on our contracts we're monitoring, not treating.
But that's interesting.
People get worried, obviously. They see a pest control van turn up or they see someone doing some work and they think straight away, they've got a problem.
Yeah,
it's interesting what you said about the box, because when you see the box, especially if you're in a restaurant, you think, ooh, I haven't ordered yet.
Yeah.
Should we just step out before the waitress comes round?
Yeah. But so actually, I guess you make that as kind of unobtrusive as possible.
Yeah, they're being proactive. Yeah, and being proactive. I've not even thought about that.
And so sometimes it can be down to the technician that maybe hasn't positioned that box very well. That we do try and, I mean,
maybe, you know, just a sticker on there that says we're being proactive. Yeah. We don't have a problem.
I'm sure there used to be
a good idea, actually.
I'm sure restaurants used to have a thing for these fly traps, especially in the summer. There's nothing worse than seeing a fly trap hanging, you know, those sticky
Spain, those ultraviolet
paper things or whatever it is that they used to be hanging down.
Moved on. So now we're using ultraviolet lights with decorative, looks like a normal light from the front, but on the back is a sticky pad so they can go in. Yeah, it's all... we're moving on with technology, even down to some of the boxes that are... I've got sensors in that will tell my phone that a trap's just gone off in a certain restaurant.
Yeah.
As long as it costs money. But right.
Not all pest controllers are the same, and we've that's quite clear. And you wrote us a brilliant blog recently all about the kinds of things that you should be thinking about when you're considering engaging a company that does what you do. So just give us some of the kind of the obvious things to look out for.
I mean, unfortunately, a lot of people just go for immediately, you've got a pest problem, household name, your Rentokil, etc. The reality is what you're paying for. If you're a small local business, my advice would be to use a small local company. It's all about doing your sort of checks on them, making sure that they're qualified, they've got the right sort of qualifications, and a member to the board, for example the British Pest Control Association. That's the governing body.
Keep the money local for, that's yeah, what well, I that, say
that's it. Local business.
What you're paying for is that national coverage, the offices
and overhead
and the difference can be quite dramatic. I mean, for example, I am qualified as a technician within Rentokil, although I don't do it as much now. The difference can be hundreds of pounds for, what is a one call out. You know, so you could be paying £300-400 when you should be paying £50-60, for example. And like you say, I'm all
so
about...
So we need to look out for accreditation in terms of a national organisation that you mentioned.
There's two main ones, really. The British Pest Control Association and also the National Pest Control, NPTA. And what it's about is making sure that they are... It doesn't matter so much about the two. The British Pest Control Association is more the higher one of the two because companies go to... for example, Tesco's and Sainsbury's, and they've got the British retail standards.
I see.
And they will insist that companies use a pest control.
So it's like a quality standard.
Yeah, it's a quality standard. I get audited once a year.
Right.
They come to my.
So
business.
It's not a given. It's you don't just register and pay a fee.
You have to earn it.
I get audited. They want to check my health and safety records. They want to check everything. So yeah, it's an audit. They check me out, and then they. If they find problems, then I have to rectify those problems before they, authorise my next sort of year's.
And then within that, you personally have a level of certification that testifies as to the training that you've gone through on an individual level. Is that right?
So we go for to be a member of the British Pest Control Association, you have to be a level 2 in pest management.
Right.
From there, all technicians that work for my company have to be level 2.
Right.
I've got, if I take on someone new, I've got, I believe it's 12 months to get them qualified.
Right.
If not, then I either can't be a member anymore or, we do some talking with the association.
But so as a minimum, you should be looking for a level 2 certified pest control.
Yeah, level 2 pest management.
Pest management.
And that's with the RSPH, Royal Society for Public Health.
Right.
And then you've got the as a member of the British Pest Control Association again, I've got to do my CPD, my continued personal development. I've got to get 20 points a year, and that can be it can't be just in one area. I've got, for example, I've just done a 2-day bird proofing course. I've just done that Asian hornets, which I can self-certify. I can tell them I've just done this. This is what I've done. This is what they covered, and they will give me a certain amount of points for that. I've just got to reach my points in it, but it can't all be in one area. It can't be just in, like, for bird work. It needs to be an element of health and safety, an element of...
Because presumably there would be nothing to stop Brian going out and starting up a business as a pest controller without any certification.
Or you've got your bee suit now.
Or me.
Yeah, you've got your bee suit.
He does look scary with that suit on email, let me tell you.
That's the problem. That's the problem we have. You can do a one-day rodenticide course, which qualifies you to buy rodenticide, which the laws have just changed.
The chemicals.
And then you can call yourself a pest control.
Right. So you could be putting rat poison down in someone's garden and killing all the local cats.
Exactly. Exactly. Because if you're not doing your CPD and you know about the law changes and what you can and can't do, and all of a sudden, you've had an accident, you've killed a pet or, child or has eaten something or... or anything like that, then, you know...
So there's no accountability there or...
Exactly.
No.
No. Worrying, suppose, isn't it? Really worrying.
Well, it is, I think, yeah. A little knowledge is a dangerous thing, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I mean, you can... We find that you get, for example, window cleaners turning up in the summer thinking, oh, wasps, I can make a little bit of money on the side. I just need to buy some powder. Yeah. And that's where the industry's trying to cut down, because some... Few years ago, you could buy some of this stuff on eBay, and they're really trying to drive down on the amounts you can buy it as a general public, etc. And it's a good thing. It is a good thing because, as I say, we're trying to cut down on. It's not only that, but it's the wildlife secondary poisoning. So we poison rats.
It's nasty rats stuff. Then, yeah, I mean, it's for humans as well. You know, if you come into contact.
Oh,
with
it's
it.
Dangerous. Mm, yeah. So I guess, as well as you doing all the kind of ongoing preventative contracts and stuff, is the majority of it still reactive? It's when people experience the problem, they then call you, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately. It's the strange thing about my business is I'm working now to this week's diary. Unfortunately, the person that I'm going to next week doesn't even know they've got a problem yet.
No.
And that's the strange thing about the business. Once you can get your head around the fact that I know it's going to be full.
Right.
I know I'm going to be busy because that's what happens.
Yeah.
I had an interesting chat with a customer before who said his diary was full till Christmas. And I said, well, mine's full till Friday.
Yeah. That's interesting, isn't it?
And he said he couldn't do what I did because the anxiety of knowing that.
That's a really good
that's
point.
True. Yeah. I mean, the other thing we touched on earlier, I mean, I've used Kelly several times in properties in Maidstone over the years, and we had a turned out to be a rat challenge, which actually got through. It's where somebody had a downpipe thing and took it out right up under the roof. It's like as big as a penny, almost, didn't fill it in, and it's kind of got in there. I won't tell you the whole story, but actually had a couple of babies while it was in there, and they came down the downpipe into the kitchen and all that sort of stuff. And then we had a moth problem at another one. But the one big thing I'm hearing at the moment is this bird proofing for pigeons under solar panels and stuff. So is that a real big problem?
Yeah, it's a real big problem because it's something that the solar panel companies don't mention at all at the sale point of solar panels. Pigeons love solar panels. They generate heat. They protect them from the elements. They protect them from predators such as magpies getting the eggs, etc. So it's a big problem that's really causing problems. And unfortunately we're sort of a couple of years too late on it being highlighted.
So everyone with solar panels, if they haven't had the problem up until now, they probably soon will have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kelly, it's been fascinating talking to you, and you, Michelle. You've been wonderful guests today.
Weren't they brilliant?
Tell us how people can get in touch with you, Kelly.
Certainly, yes. I mean, obviously, our website is the we've got quick contact on there, and that's www.pest-tech.com. org, or you can email me direct on kelly@pest-tech.org. We've obviously got all the usual social medias.
Very active on the Twitter, LinkedIn as well.
And Facebook business page. You just have to type in Pest Control Maidstone and you'll find me.
And you'll catch them both at BBN Maidstone every meeting, of course.
If you can get in.
Well, you can't, but I just thought I'd say it anyway.
On that note, we are going to have to leave it there. We are going to play you out with some tunage, which is, again, got a golf theme. I'm not going to give it away, but there is a rather large tournament happening in Pebble Beach in California this week. It starts on Thursday. But for now, goodbye, and thanks very much for listening.
Bye for now.